on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial portfolio manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and today's Thursday, May 1st, 2025. Now, as we work through the dynamics of a changing landscape, the stock market may not move in a straight line, and that's something we certainly saw in April. With all the news, with all the changes, with all the uncertainty, through it all, we ended about 1 to 1.5% lower from an index perspective than we started the month. But that doesn't mean that we are out of the woods, because these fresh challenges, the things that have been driving that uncertainty, are still very much here. And so the objective for this podcast and radio program and YouTube series is to help you understand and digest these changes to hopefully make you a better and more informed investor. Now, before we move forward with our regularly scheduled programming, I wanted to briefly mention that yesterday, Justin and I hosted a wealth webinar. We covered a lot of topics. We went over a market update, did a bunch of Q&A at the end of it, but also talked about how we at KPP are launching a new offering through our custom indexing program. Now, we have many strategies, four in particular, that are already pre-canned, ready to go, but it really is about customization. So whatever you are looking for, we can work with you. All right, back to the mission at hand. As always, we have a mixture of educational items and actionable material to go over today. But most importantly, I'm looking forward to speaking with some of you, hopefully via live call, or at least getting your questions on voicemail or from the comment section of our YouTube channel. And because the most important part of this show is answering those questions, before we talk about today's market performance, before we run down those show topics, let's tackle our first caller question now.
This is our Southern California. My question is regarding tips. Actually, it's the Victor Tango India Papa VTIPS. That's the ETF. If I have a lot of cash, a couple hundred thousand, let's say, obviously, I want to put it someplace where I can earn some rate of return. And I'm thinking of investing it in the VTIP. It's the Vanguard TIPS, inflation protected. What's your thoughts on that? Holding cash short term, that means within 6 months, a year, maybe even 2 years. Again, thanks all for all your answers and input. Keep it up. Thank you so much. Bye.
So we're looking at ticker VTIP. That is the Vanguard Short-Term Inflation Protected Securities ETF. Now, one thing you have to know about this is it invests in short-term TIPS, Treasury Inflation Protected Securities. And the way TIPS work is there is an inflation adjustment. So they're a good way to maintain, preserve your spending power while getting a little bit of yield. And essentially, you use them if you think in the short term, especially in the short term, because these are short duration securities, you expect inflation to increase rapidly. And so, you know, the benefit being, because of the duration, it's more focused on the inflation side without getting that additional duration risk because they're short maturity treasuries. And it's ideal in a risk-off environment too. And so now, you know, if you think in the short term of the next 6 months that inflation is going to spike dramatically, then TIPS could be a good place to be. But, you know, given in the longer time sample, inflation doesn't tend to spike very quickly. Now, obviously, it could because of what's going on with tariffs and what have you. You have to understand that you don't get something for nothing. And so by getting that hedge against inflation, you're giving up nominal yield. the long-term distribution yield of this fund, about 2.75%. So typically, if you would think that inflation would not be a big problem in the next 6 months, well, then you'd probably want to go to a money market fund or another short-term treasury ETF like an SGEV or something like that. But if you're concerned about inflation, especially in the next 6 months before you need to use the money, VTIP is a good way to go. Now, we got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and here's a little bit of what we have planned. My main focus point concerns this headline. Is the AI revolution under threat from tariffs? A new wave of US tariffs is raising costs and creating supply chain uncertainties for data centers and tech giants. Also, we'll touch on how there's been a lot of focus on GDP, Q1 GDP, which came out on Wednesday, but really what you should be thinking about and what is more important this week are the jobs numbers on Friday, which is tomorrow. So we'll talk about why. We'll also touch on how home builders are not seeing the demand that they've been hoping for. And so they are piling on discounts. What does that mean for the housing market? What could it mean for anybody who is looking to buy a home? And should we have time at the end of the show? We don't usually dig into individual company earnings reports, but McDonald's US sales had a drastic drop, the most since the height of the pandemic. So what does that mean for the spending power of the consumer? We also have some questions ready to play, including one on IDXX, which is IDEX Laboratories, Inc., and one on Salesforce, ticker CRM, as well as some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. And of course, I welcome your questions now or anytime throughout the show. Now we're going to do a break, and on the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity and tackle more of your questions from the InvestTalk Anytime Listen or Not line. You know the number, 888-99-CHART.
Okay, got to get serious with my finances. I've been working a long time, and I know there's still got to be more that I can do to build my wealth quicker. I don't want to have to work forever.
If you are not maximizing your employer-sponsored retirement plan, KPP Financial can help. With our professional oversight, you can potentially enhance your investment performance by an average of 3% annually. At KPP Financial, we provide a comprehensive 401k management program designed to optimize your retirement savings. Our approach includes creating custom investment allocations tailored to your goals and risk tolerance. That can make a big difference in your favor.
Maybe it's time to tune up my retirement plan.
For more information on how you can take control of your retirement savings, visit our website, kppfinancial.com.
KPP Financial. Sounds good.
Luke Guerrero is here, and he's ready with answers to your finance and investment questions. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's talk a little bit about the market today. U.S. stocks finished generally higher, though ending a bit off of their session highs, pretty near the lows of the day. The Dow up 21 basis points, S&P 500 up 63 basis points, NASDAQ up 1.52%, Russell 2000 small caps up about 60 basis points. Nevertheless, it looks like the S&P logged its eighth consecutive gain, coming out of a month with a lot of volatility. Big tech was mostly higher on the day after some pretty well-received results after the close yesterday from Microsoft and Meta, really bolstered by Microsoft's cloud demand. Saw the stock soaring today. Other outperformers included semis, software, communications, networking, and energy names. Looks like, let's see, underperformers, pharma didn't do particularly well, biotech, managed care, and insurers. Treasuries were a bit weaker. Curve looked a little flatter on the day as well. How about the dollar? Dollar was up 70 basis points on the day. Gold down 2.9%, heading the opposite direction. And crude oil, though, settled up 1.8%, still at a pretty low level. And so what really drove a lot of the activity today was those well-received earnings from big tech names that showed a lot higher CapEx guides and further support for something that's driven the market over the past 2 years, that AI secular growth theme. We also saw some de-escalation, a little bit, not too much, but some de-escalation or the hints of de-escalation. Remarks from Mexico's Sheinbaum, the president of Mexico, talking about the positive conversation she's been having with the president and how she hopes to continue those conversations forward. We also got news about retail buying at historic rates, about $40 billion in flows last month from retail, even more from systematic strategies as well. And so that has really done a good job of bolstering the market through all of this volatility. Doesn't look like the Fed really did much this week at all, certainly not today, though there is a meeting next week. A lot of macro data though. ISM manufacturing came in better than feared at 48.7 new orders, and employment components was higher month over month, but it wasn't all perfect. U.S. manufacturing PMIs came in at 50.2, below the consensus. Weekly initial jobless claims jumped to 241,000 versus 225 is what we were looking for. Continuing claims printed at the highest level in 3.5 years at 1.916 million. Looking ahead to tomorrow, April employment report caps off the week on Friday. Looks like the consensus is about 130,000 increase in non-farm payrolls following that 228,000 gain in March. Unemployment rate set to hopefully stay unchanged at 4.2%. I hope you've been telling all of your friends that if they want to check out the webinar, if they want to check out the show, if they want to check out stock ideas, stock questions rather, you can just head over to the InvestTalk YouTube channel. And we have it all broken out for you in various playlists to really make it easy to see and digest. And while you're over there, if you have a question that is burning on the top of your mind that you just need answered, feel free to leave it in the comment section of our YouTube channel. We like to get to those as soon as we possibly can. And this question came in earlier on ticker HIMS, HIMS. It says, great info here. I'm looking at picking up some shares of HIMS. Would love to hear your thoughts on the stock. And is now a good entry point? We'll be listening on the podcast. Well, taking a look at HIMS, it is a direct-to-consumer telehealth platform. They give personalized healthcare solutions, including sexual health, mental health, dermatology, weight management. And so they connect consumers with licensed professionals. And then they have those licensed professionals prescribe medications, some of which are over-the-counter, that are delivered to your door, or you go to a pharmacy if you need to pick it up. But what have you, it essentially connects consumers with needed pharmaceuticals. Now, recently they had a partnership with Novo Nordisk to offer GLP-1 Wegovy through its platform. And because of that, there's a huge surge in the stock price. It's up about 49.55% year to date, up 189% over the past 52 weeks. Its cash flow improving very quickly from 2022. Its profitability improving as well. And its relative strength looks pretty solid, especially on the back of recent trends. Now, one thing that you got to note is they issued a bunch of shares at one time. And so because of that, they don't really have a lot of debt, only $11 million of debt on a $7.4 billion market cap business. The one thing that scares me, when you have a 49.55% run-up, which is propelled by, yes, news of this partnership, but also propelled by short covering. You have 33.3% short interest out there. That is an incredibly high amount of short interest. And so from my perspective, it can drop pretty precipitously as easily as it can climb, as it has. The past 3 months, it's down about 3%, even with that massive climb. Price to forward-looking earnings, 47.5 times. So although I do like the company because it helps to eliminate some of the, I would say, unnecessary burden of healthcare, I love the idea. It just looks a little too expensive to me. And the market at 33.31% short interest tends to agree. We may not be able to answer it before the break, but let's at least play another question now.
Just wanted to get your thoughts on CRM, Salesforce, CRM. It's just one of those symbols that I like for a long, long, very long hold. I know it's probably not a buy point this second, but I just was wanted to get your thoughts generally speaking, and also what you think a future buy point would be for this particular one. Thank you so much. Bye.
Let's take a look at Salesforce. It is ticker CRM. It is essentially the gold standard, the global leader in CRM platforms, which is why the ticker is CRM, for customer relationship management platforms. Year to date, it is down about 19%, 18.5%. Yeah, 19.44% year to date, down 21.18% in the past 3 months. So let's take a look at what's going on in their balance sheet here. Well, they got about $12 billion in debt on a $257 billion market cap company. So certainly nothing too terrible there. Their growth looks pretty solid on an annualized basis, even through the pandemics, consistently growing through 2024, through 2025, 17.3% growth rate on an annualized basis going back the past 5 years. Margins have been expanding as well. Honestly, compared to where they've been, they're trading at a relatively cheap price of about 23.4 times forward-looking earnings. I love the company. They're a global leader. They are still growing. Their cash flow looks solid. Their dividend, not too terrible, not too shabby at 0.62%. I do agree it's not currently at a buy point, but honestly, it's been closer than it has been in a very long time. That is CRM Salesforce. Great company. Might be time to buy soon. Thanks for the call. Head to noon break. More of your questions, answers to come.
...2025 rolls on, and you've got finance and investment questions for Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
My main focus point today concerns this important headline. Is the AI revolution under threat from tariffs? And the reason why this question has to be asked is because what goes into the components of chips, of data centers, oftentimes comes from international inputs. And so will driving up costs put the US in second place? As I mentioned, these tariffs, especially on Chinese goods, are disrupting the crucial supply chain at a time when companies are trying to spend more and more money in what is essentially an AI arms race. Microsoft, Alphabet, Amazon have spent about $155 billion, or rather have planned to spend $155 billion more. But what are they going to get for it? More expensive products means less of an ability to build out these data centers, to build out this infrastructure. Often these products are made overseas. And so these tariffs affect costs, but also affect availability as well. And so you've already seen, before you saw earnings yesterday, right? Earnings from Microsoft were primarily driven from cloud demand. But recently they've mentioned they're scaling back on a 2 gigawatt data center capacity project in the US and in Europe. Amazon also delaying leases, citing not just increased costs, but power capacity management. It's not just about building the data centers, it's about building the power infrastructure as well. And so because of this, right, for companies like Vistra and Constellation, who just put out a bunch of money to restart Three Mile Island, these companies that support this energy demand, the buildouts are becoming more expensive for them, but the lack of hyperscaling from these tech companies also eats away at their revenue over time. And so the effects of this aren't just isolated to those big tech companies that are trying to build out AI infrastructure, right? It affects the power companies, it affects the construction companies, it affects the building companies. And that's why, you know, as of a couple days ago, the Magnificent Seven has lost trillions in value year to date. Now, they've clawed a lot of that back. But a lot of what has driven the market over the past couple years has been the AI-related growth theme and the amount of money that companies are willing to spend in order to come out ahead. And so the signal going forward is, what are companies saying during quarterly results? So far, you've seen companies saying they are not really scaling back. The ones that have reported are not really scaling back so much on CapEx, which is a good sign. Now, does that rely upon an idea that there will be a scaled down tariff regime? Maybe. If it bears out that it's as expensive as it appears it may be now, does that stand? I don't know. But if you're an external supplier of these companies, you don't just sit on your product. You're selling it elsewhere. Because there's demand from every country on earth who wants AI to be most successful in their country. And so not only do you have it from the, okay, Microsoft can't build as many data centers, it means somebody else is building them. The demand is there. And so that could further exacerbate and worsen delays and pricing for American firms down the road. Now, some analysts remain optimistic, arguing that even a short delay can be overcome in 12 to 18 months when prices settle down. But frankly, I would say this area of the market is perhaps the most important since the dot-com era. And you can see that in what companies are saying and where they're investing. Before we head to a break, let's play a caller question now. Oh, I'm sorry. We're going with a YouTube question. This one from our friend Jim Leahy. It's on ticker CP and CNI. It says, I currently am DCA in dollar cost averaging into CP and CNI. I'm aware a recession probably won't be good news for them in the short run, but do you think they are good buys for 10 to 20 years? Well, it is difficult to say what individual company will be a good buy for 10 to 20 years, because we've seen how much can change in just a couple months. But let's do our best to take a look at these names. First one we'll take a look at is CP, and we may have to tackle the other one when we come back from the break. But ticker CP is Canadian Pacific Kansas City Limited. It was formed from the merger of Canadian Pacific and Kansas City Southern. It's the only single rail line that connects Canada, the US, and Mexico. So obviously, in a world of rising tensions where you have less trade between these countries, well, a company like CP is going to take a hit. CNI, on the other hand, operates the largest rail network in Canada. It does extend into the US. It does offer that integrated transport. But the core message here is, okay, in a time of rising tensions, how will freight lines fare? And so year to date for CP, it looks like they're down about 1.29%, pretty modest, frankly. I'm sorry, down about 3.29%. Past 3 months, down 12.85%. And the past 52 weeks, down 5.71%. But you know what? They're still performing pretty well relative to the TSX Composite, which is the Canadian Stock Exchange. What about CNI? Ticker CNI, as it loads very slowly. You know what? We'll have to tackle this when we come back. On the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this topic. Fewer than half of Americans plan to travel this summer. A recent Bankrate survey reveals that only 46% of U.S. adults intend to travel this summer, with affordability cited by 65% of non-travelers as the main barrier, leading many to consider debt of staycations instead. That's tomorrow, but for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many factors. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, before the break, we were talking about CP and CNR. I said CNI, but it is CNR, Canadian National Railway Company. And both are Canadian rail companies, both freight lines, both transport goods and commodities. CNR more heavily on the commodity side. Now, CNI, as I mentioned, is kind of unique. Oh, I'm sorry, CP, as I mentioned, is kind of unique in that it connects the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. And so you get goods traveling on it back and forth across borders. That probably is why it has had a pretty strong relative strength experience, especially compared to CNR over the years. Now, they're both down a bit this year. They're both fairly large companies. CNR is about 83 billion Canadian dollar market cap, with only about 20 billion in debt. CP is about it's like 93 billion Canadian dollar market cap with only about 20 billion in debt. And so, I mean, look at this revenue growth, right? 13% on an annualized basis. This one obviously slower, 2.7% on an annualized basis, especially given, again, the niche ability of CP. But overall, I think you hit the nail on the head, Jim did, in that there are times when there's economic stress where good companies won't do well. Now, if you have a holistic portfolio that's exposed to various sectors, well, I would say maybe you don't want to be underweight to drastically various sectors. So I think these are both solid companies. If I had to choose between them, I think I would go with CP because of its unique offering. But either way, I think if this trade, if these trade tensions continue, both of these companies stand to suffer in the short to medium term. Thanks for watching. Let's play another. Head back to the voice bank for this fresh question.
Just wanted to hear your take on the stock IDEX Laboratories, ticker IDXX, company headquartered here in Maine, provides services for veterinarians and might be looking to buy it, but just wanted to get your take on that stock. Thanks for the show. Love it. And look forward to hearing your response.
Alrighty. IDEX Laboratories, that is ticker IDXX. It provides diagnostic and software solutions for animal health, water testing, and dairy markets. And so it helps veterinarians, like the caller said, but also helps farmers as well. Now, taking a look at its performance year-to-date, pretty stellar, up 14% year-to-date, up 11.69% in the past 3 months. Only up 71 basis points on the 52-week time frame. Now, they just did their full year outlook recently for 2025, and they actually revised their EPS upwards, kind of showing the incorporation of benefits from what has been some pretty favorable foreign exchange impacts. They also are launching new products this year for cancer diagnostics, for early detection in canine lymphoma. And so the combination of what has been really helping them from a foreign exchange perspective with these new products has really floated this company year to date when most of the market is down. Now, it is a fairly large company, $35 billion market cap, and very little debt, only about $987 million of debt. They've been buying back shares consistently. They do not pay a dividend, though. Their earnings, like I said, have been upgraded. And overall, it looks like a very healthy company. Cash flow consistently improving, not in a straight line, but pretty consistent over the past 5 years. Profitability falling a little bit, but still at a very reasonable level. And valuations coming back down to earth. But all in all, still pretty expensive. But I mean, when you're getting 23% margins on a company that's growing at about 10% in revenue on an annualized basis, maybe it makes sense. But growth has slowed a little bit, and that's something you would have to consider. It's shown itself here in this relative strength as well, coming back down to earth with the S&P 500 after strongly outperforming over the past 5 years. And so I think this is another example of a great company that is a little bit too expensive for my taste at the moment. Now, up momentum names tend to continue to be up momentum in the short term. It is up 9% today, which does stand to boost again this forward-looking priced earnings. So for now, I would keep it on my watch list. Obviously, earnings went well, forward-looking guidance went well. And so all this positive price activity has made it a little bit too expensive. That is IDEX Laboratories. Wait for it to come back down to earth. Ticker IDEXX. All right. So I'm sure Justin yesterday talked about GDP, all the rage these days with all the cool kids. And the news was that Q1 GDP shrank by about 30 basis points. And so, diving in very briefly, you know, it's important to understand what has really been driving that. So GDP is consumer spending plus government spending plus business investment plus exports minus imports. Now, the reason why you subtract imports is not because, you know, imports are bad. That's not how things work. It's because when you're importing something that is being bought by CG, you know, the government, by consumers, by businesses, you don't want to double count it. You only want to count domestic production. And so businesses in the business investment and inventories will import things and then turn them into finished goods. And that does count. And so what you want to take out is anything that is a input internationally that isn't the product of the country, good or bad. And so because of this quirk where companies are buying a bunch of things to front run the tariffs without actually increasing inventories, well, it makes it look like it's worse than it was. And so GDP honestly, growth was pretty strong. Consumer spending rebounded after a weak January as well. Service spending remained pretty stable. Employment growth held pretty steady as well. And so it's important to note that, yeah, it was negative. Don't overreact. Understand the statistical quirks of what goes on in some of these numbers. I actually sent a podcast to my friend the other day to explain all of what the Bureau of Labor Statistics does. I think he got through about 3 minutes before he thought it was too boring. But either way, understand that all these things are incredibly complicated and that the effects of policy, the effects of shifts take time. They will impact jobs. They will impact inflation. They will impact output. And April data will help a little bit because it'll tell us about business planning. It'll tell us more about what inventories are looking like. If consumers are saying, this is very scary, I'm going to stop spending. If we even have import or export demand. Now, we do have a jobs report tomorrow. It will tell us a little bit about April payrolls. It'll tell us about how many jobs were created, but we've seen companies that have already talked about cutting back. And so it is important to note, I'll emphasize it again for the sake of clarity. Don't read too much into the data you're seeing of months in the past. Effects take time to manifest themselves. Let's head back to the YouTube comments section and answer this question. It says, hello, is it a good idea to own these two stocks for a long-term investment? Talking about KO and PEP. So let's take a look at KO first. KO is a tiny, tiny little company called Coca-Cola Inc. I don't think I have to do anything to explain to you what Coca-Cola Inc. does. But it's a big one. It's a $313 billion market cap company with a B that is still growing at about 5% on an annualized basis over the past 6 years. Now, it has quite a bit of debt, but for its size, it doesn't really matter. About $45 billion in debt. Pays a solid dividend, 2.81%, which is on the low end, honestly, of where it's been over the past 6 years. Its cash flow has been dropping. It dropped in 2024. Its profitability, though, has remained pretty stable, as has its relative valuation. Now, year to date, it's up 14.5%, up 15.11% in the past 52 weeks, up 12.3% in the past 3 months. For relative valuation perspective, it's trading about its average, right? 23.9 times forward-looking earnings. And as I mentioned, its margins, very, very stable. Old name, very stable. People tend to gravitate towards these names in times of economic uncertainty, especially because it pays, like I said, a pretty solid dividend in the 3.8 to 5% range. Now, ticker KO, let's take a look at, is Petco, or I'm sorry, ticker PEP, that is PepsiCo. Again, don't really have to tell you what this company does, the main competitor to Coca-Cola. We all have our personal preferences on the drinks, and therefore we should probably also have our own personal preferences on the companies. So while that's loading, I'll pull something up on my other screen as well. Pepsi, smaller company, only about a $186 billion market cap, though obviously still very large. Revenue growth, pretty solid on the five-year annualized basis, but it has slowed down significantly more than Coca-Cola, right? You see way better growth in Coca-Cola over the past couple of years compared to Pepsi. Margins, lower, debt, a little bit higher, especially relative to where it is in terms of its market cap. And it's trading a little bit cheaper, but you know, you're getting slower growth, you're getting lower margins, you're getting higher debt service. Its dividend yield, pretty decent, about 4.1%. Ranges in the same area as where Coke is. And so Coca-Cola really has stronger global demand. They have effective pricing strategies, but there are some challenges they've been facing in North America, whereas PepsiCo has been really growing their product offerings in the past couple of years. And so both these companies may face operational challenges related to tariffs. But overall, if I had to go choose between these two companies, I would choose the one with the stronger balance sheet, the one with the better near-term growth, and the one with the better margins. That is Coca-Cola, ticker KO. Thanks for watching. All right, let's talk a little bit about housing. And housing demand has really fallen off a cliff. One of the reasons why is when people are uncertain, understandably, they don't say, you know what, let's go make a $500,000 purchase. And so builders like Taylor Morrison are now offering $500,000 vouchers. Not just to stimulate demand, but in the wake of what could potentially be a tariff-induced rise in home construction costs of up to $15,000. And what is driving this increase in costs? Well, input materials, Canadian lumber, HVAC parts, porcelain, appliances. The inputs to a lot of things that go into a home. Pull Group's revenue last quarter dropped 2%. D.R. Horton's dropped 15%. And so even before tariffs were implemented, you already were starting to see a disappointing spring season manifest itself. And anytime businesses need to try and stimulate demand, stimulate consumers to purchasing, they're going to increase incentives. They're not going to cut costs, though they are kind of cutting costs a little bit when they are increasing these incentives, but they're short-term incentives to grab press and to stimulate demand. Interestingly enough, completed but unsold home inventory is at its highest since 2009, especially in states like Texas and Florida, which have been building properties very quickly. And there's multiple reasons for that. The cost part of it, but also this debt servicing part of it. You have higher interest rates than you've had in quite some time. Couple that with higher prices because it costs more to make a home, a lot of people aren't going to buy. And then add on another layer. Credit standards becoming stricter. And so now you don't even really have people that are qualifying. They're struggling to qualify for these loans. Now trying to get people to move as well is another issue. They look at, this report was looking at essentially the cost, right? The incentive cost, which is essentially the discount required to get somebody who owns a home to move. It's up about 1.6 percentage points from January. It means people are more and more dug in, more and more locked in to where they live. Some companies are offering as much as 19% in discounts. And so that's why you've seen builder stocks down pretty significantly over the past 6 months. And so the question remains, is this a long-term demand issue? Is it that rates are still too high? Rates are going to continue to be too high. People don't have enough money. Or is it a supply issue? It's expensive to build. It's expensive to fix. It's expensive to maintain. Maybe the answer is both. Either way, this should certainly inform how you're thinking about your life if you're trying to move, or if you're trying to put money in any of these housing construction companies. We got time to play a question, so let's get to one now.
Yeah, this is Jesse calling from Oklahoma. I had a question about Unum Group, ticker symbol UNM. It's done well for me, got a full position in it. I was just curious what you thought about the company, whether it's a hold or if you think maybe this is a good time to take some profits, or if you see maybe a reason to lower my position in it. Just wanted to get your thoughts on the company. Appreciate your time and love the show.
Ticker UNM, Unum Group. Excuse me, is a financial protection disability services benefits company, right? It's an insurance company. It's fairly large, about $13.769 million. They offer disability insurance, life insurance, accident insurance, dental, vision insurance. You get the picture. They're an insurance company. Now, year to date, this name has been performing pretty well, up 6% on an annualized basis, up 1.55% on the 3 month, up 49.28% on the 52 week. Growth, pretty solid. Net income growth, solid as well. In terms of debt, they don't really have that much, about $3.8 billion on a $13.6 billion market cap company. Their cash flow really improved from 2021. Their profitability has been improving as well. They've been buying back shares. They pay a good dividend, not a lot of short interest. And their valuation, pretty reasonable. Price to forward-looking earnings, 8.4%. Price to book value, 1.3. Full disclosure, we do own this name for the client, for our clients in one of our strategies. So Unum Group, ticker UNM, we approve. This is Invest Talk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and we have one goal here to help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work continues after this break, our final break, so get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
The calls are free. The unbiased answers are free. So what are you waiting for? Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hello, this is Adrian from Texas, and I was calling with regards to ticker symbol EL, that's the Estee Lauder company. It's been going down, but I saw a little bit of a pickup this past week, but not sure if it's going to last or not. So wanted to know what your thoughts were, if it's worth looking into, keeping it on my watch. Thank you very much.
Estee Lauder, ticker EL, is a leader in prestige beauty. They offer skincare, makeup, fragrances, hair care products. And it has not been doing too well, really, for the past 3 years. 2022, they underperformed the S&P 500 by 13.5%, and then 65% underperformance in 2023. 2024, they underperformed by 72%, and they're underperforming by 16.7% this year. Down 53.76% in the past 52 weeks, down 21.46% year to date. Sales fallen from 2023, really fallen from a high in 2022 when they started to underperform and projected to fall again. Net margins slipping as well. Debt, they have a decent amount of debt, about $8.9 billion on $21 billion market cap. But I think it's a story of not a lot of growth. Decent amount of debt, cash flow falling, margins slipping, and overall, probably heading into some economic headwinds where people tend to pare down spending on the types of goods that Estee Lauder sells. So for ticker EL, going to pass. Thanks for the call. Now, as I mentioned at the top of the show, we don't typically talk about individual company earnings, but I really saw something interesting out of McDonald's. In the U.S., same-store sales dropped 3.6%. year over year, the steepest decline since mid-2020 in the midst of the pandemic. Now, that compares to the 1.4% drop that analysts forecasted, so it is significantly higher, right? It's the sharpest pullback since the pandemic. And the reasons why? Well, volatility, geopolitical tensions, those are the key drivers for falling food traffic at the store, and overall economic anxiety that have made low and middle income consumers cut back. In fact, those groups have cut back on fast food visits by nearly 10% in Q1. And you can say, okay, well, we should all be eating less fast food. But what is driving this is unlikely to be an urge to eat healthier options and more likely to be strained pocketbooks. Even with McDonald's trying to offset the declines with promotions like a $5 meal deal and tie-ins with movies, it didn't really do much. And so that's the first part of it. U.S. consumers not spending as much money at places that honestly tend to do well in economic downturns because of the cheap dining, though I will say fast food has gotten pretty expensive over the past couple of years. But then there's the other part of it. Global comparable sales dipped 1% year over year, specifically in UK or in Europe. And that's even with growth in the Middle East and Japan. And so those particular segments in Europe fell by far more than that 1% decrease implies. And the CEO said the reason why, after surveying a bunch of customers, anti-American sentiment rising internationally, up 8 to 10 points, an 8 to 10 point increase in negative reviews reported in Northern Europe and Canada. This led to a company having its revenue fall to $5.96 billion versus $6.12 billion. Billion expected. As a result, shares fell about 1% on Thursday. But I think the core message is one that understanding the implications of policy are sometimes farther reaching than you think. Right? The CEO of McDonald's is saying that they have done surveys that are suggesting that international customers are going to pull back on spending on American companies. And so you couple that with some deteriorating economic data, stock market just chugging along. Someone's got to be right. Someone's got to be wrong here. Is the economy booming? Is the economy falling? Only time will tell. Either way, as I always say, investing for return is only part of the story. You have to invest for risk as well. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening and encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. You can get them anywhere you listen to podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, you name it. While you're over there on iTunes, please be sure to leave us a rate and review. One thing I got to mention, we can help you better understand your portfolio dynamics. We can build you a full financial plan, optimize your 401k. We can even build you a custom index tracking strategy that imparts your values into your investing. No matter what you need, we got it over at investtalk.com. Just click the portfolio review button. It is a free and confidential service. For everybody who joined Justin and myself yesterday, we thank you. We did it out of our new office. I thought it went okay. Maybe you couldn't hear me at first. We worked it out. Got a compliment on the mustache. That was nice. But if you want to check it out, head over to YouTube. It's always available there. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial.
Not the weekend.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461.